Holy shit, is it true? Am I sitting here right now doing a TNA review after a TNA pay-per-view buy? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. It is a Sunday night. TNA just wrapped up its biggest event of the year. And honestly, maybe its biggest event of all time. They were here in New York. I wasn't there. I know people who were. But they were in New York at the UBS Arena, setting their all-time North American attendance record. They managed to do it tonight. 7,623 was the attendance that they announced. A lot of that you can thank AJ Styles for, because it was only a few days ago that TNA made it official. They aired a little vignette at the end of Impact that showed his old gear sitting in a bin, and then they made the announcement. They put a press release out for it. AJ Styles is coming home. The prodigal son returns to TNA. What's he going to do? We don't know. But everybody was hoping he would come out to his old theme music. So if you were looking forward to that, then you should be happy, because you got AJ Styles on this show. He did come out to his old TNA theme song. He didn't do much, but I will say, you know, what they did use him for, I thought it was actually a very smart way to use him as far as putting over an existing TNA talent. But the funny part to me is that there was one point in his promo tonight when he came out to really put over Leon Slater after his X Division title win. And of course, the obligatory one more match, right? One more match, one more match. And he said, no, I'll get back to that, right? He never did. He did what he came to do, and he got the hell out of there. So will we ever see another AJ Styles match in TNA again? Probably, but I don't know. We certainly didn't get any indication of what that would be tonight. So I could see where some people might be disappointed, but I actually thought what they used him for was smart. And that really was the big story coming into this show. What this show really was all about, though, or should have been, was the main event. Trick Williams is an NXT star. He has had the TNA World Heavyweight Championship now for a few months. And I figured that the idea was that they would go to Slammiversary, which was in New York, and that would be the perfect place to have him drop that championship, not only back to a TNA star, but crown a brand new star in TNA, somebody who has been more than ready to win that championship for a long time and take that mantle, right? Joe Hendry was the one that everybody wanted to see win the championship, and then he did, and he had a run with it. And I don't know that it was a very eventful run, right? But it was, a lot of times it's more about the chase than it is what happens. It's like the dog catching the car. You catch the car, it's like, well, now what, right? But he did it. Mike Santana now is that guy. Mike Santana is the guy that they have been building now for the entire year, for this very moment. And then instead of doing one-on-one, they made it a triple threat match. And I thought, well, it's a little weird, but okay. Santana's still getting a title match. They're still in New York. It's all good. He could be the guy that rescues TNA, brings the championship back home. Trick Williams gets a couple months with it. No harm, no foul. And TNA did a very TNA move tonight, because they came to New York. The crowd was obviously wanting to see Mike Santana leave New York with that title. He did not leave New York with that title. Neither did Joe Hendry. Trick Williams remains TNA World Heavyweight Champion, feigning an injury, stealing the pin away from Mike Santana, pinning Joe Hendry in the main event, and retaining the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And it was as if I was having deja vu, because I feel like we have seen this playbook play out before. Last year, Joe Hendry was in, I think it was a six-man match for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship at Slammiversary, at this very event, 1 year ago. He did not win. People were clamoring for him to win. He was the viral sensation. He did not win. And a lot of people said, man, that's stupid. Why wouldn't you capitalize on this? Well, maybe they're going to put the title on him at Bound for Glory, right? It must be Bound for Glory. That's usually, if not Slammiversary, that's their biggest event of the year. So he went to Bound for Glory 3 months later. 90 days go by. And he wrestles Nick Nemeth, and it wasn't even the main event. I think the tag team title match was the main event that night. That probably should have been a dead giveaway. They go to Bound for Glory, and again, he loses. He falls short. Now, eventually, he won the championship this year at Genesis in January. But they waited an extra 6 months to put the title on him. I mean, WWE waited an extra year to put the title on Cody. I mean, it's not like that's the first time a wrestling promotion has dragged out the chase. But with someone like Joe Hendry, who gets hot, you know, he went viral, he got hot. You can't really predict that sort of thing. Had a lot of buzz around him. People were talking about him. It's a dangerous thing to do, to wait 6 months, because 6 months from now, you don't know who's going to be over and who's not going to be over. People get hurt. New people get hot. Like, shit happens. A lot can change in 6 months. So I don't want to say that when Joe Hendry won the belt in January that he was totally cooled off and nobody cared. Like, it was a nice moment. But was he quite as hot as he was 6 months earlier or 3 months earlier? Probably not. Was it the right decision to make? That's a decision that you can make on your own. And now we're in a very similar position here, where Mike Santana did not take the pin in that main event, which is probably why they made it a three-way. Looking back on why this had to be a triple threat match, he did not take the pin in that match. He was not beaten by Trick Williams. Bound for Glory is going to be their big show coming up in October, and they made another very big announcement on the show tonight as it relates to that pay-per-view. So clearly they're going to really want to build that show up. That show is taking place in Lowell, Massachusetts. One would imagine that they will not make the same mistake and really prolong this any more than it needs to be dragged out. At the latest, Bound for Glory should be where Mike Santana gets his crowning moment. And he will get that crowning moment. It's not a matter of, oh my God, maybe they're not going to put the... Of course they're going to put the title on him. They'd be fucking imbeciles not to. But it's just a matter of when. When's the right time to do it? And honestly, unless they are planning some kind of show in New York City proper, okay, not Long Island, not the suburbs, if they're going to be in Manhattan, if they're going to be in Brooklyn, if they're going to be in somewhere in the city itself, short of that, I mean, really, tonight was the night, but if they're not going to do that, Bound for Glory needs to be when this comes to an end, because something else happened on this show tonight. JC Jayne. Yes, JC Jayne. Remember my reaction when she won the NXT championship from Stephanie Vaquer? I said, JC Jayne. Now I'm sitting here talking about this woman having championships from WWE and TNA. Like, how did this happen? But she is now the TNA Knockouts champion. There was a winner-take-all match against Masha Slamovich. JC Jayne has titles now representing both WWE and TNA. But when I saw that, I said, well, surely Mike Santana is winning in the main event, and then he lost. Which means the two top titles in TNA wrestling at this very moment are held by WWE talents. On their biggest show of the year, they gave their two top titles to a couple of NXT stars. I mean, Trick already had it. He didn't really give it to him, but he held on to it, which is quite the choice to make. And at this moment, looks very embarrassing for TNA. And the only thing that makes sense to me, and the only way to really, in my opinion, to make this work, you got to go full-on invasion with this. Like, these TNA stars have to be so fucking pissed that the WWE crew has come in and raided their company of their top championships. If we don't see TNA stars being held back by security and trying to infiltrate the Performance Center starting this week on TV this Tuesday, then they're doing something wrong. And I know to WWE, TNA is not exactly the priority, right? They're not going to book their shows around TNA, but there has to be some sort of, I hate to say invasion angle, but there has to be something like that, some sense of urgency from the TNA side now, as we now head into Bound for Glory, I guess, which is their next big event. I don't see either one of these people, JC Jayne or Trick Williams, dropping either one of those titles until at the earliest Bound for Glory. But unless they got something like that planned, I mean, this is a very embarrassing situation. Like, if you're a TNA fan, right, I actually kind of have sympathy for these TNA fans. Like, some of these TNA diehard fans are looking at this, like, what must they be thinking right now? This was their biggest show ever. Almost 8,000 people in the UBS Arena, and it goes off the air the way that it did with Trick Williams and JC Jayne as your two top champions. Like, these TNA fans are some of the most loyal fans that I have ever seen, okay, in my entire life. I feel bad for them. I really do. You can't tell me that they were left with this wonderful feeling when this show was over tonight. It sucks. It really does. And I'll tell you what else sucks. Having a dog shit finish like that to your main event on what I thought overall was a pretty fun show. Right? It didn't ruin the entire show, but it definitely took the wind out of the sails of the people of the UBS Arena. I could tell you that firsthand. I had a couple of friends who were there who said the same thing. But you could just hear it. Like, if you were watching the show, you could see it, you could feel it, you could hear it. It was just like, you know, like, it let the air out of the building. And it's too bad. Because I did have fun overall, you know, with the show. The Knockouts match, like I said, JC Jane, two titles now. We have a brand new X Division champion, which was the match of the night between Leon Slater and Moose. That was great. New tag team champions, the Hardys, have regained the titles. They kind of gave it away on TV this week when they all but said that they were probably going to quit and retire if they didn't win the belts back. So you had to imagine this was going to be the outcome here. But then there was a big angle that they set up when the match was over where Bully Ray came out. D-Von was not there tonight. But Bully Ray came out and pointed out the fact, and it did hit me somewhat recently, that this year is the 25-year anniversary. Not even of the tables match they had at Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble, the Hardys and the Dudleys. But I was thinking more about the first ever TLC match, which was technically, I mean, I know they did a triangle ladder match at WrestleMania, but the first TLC match was SummerSlam, right around this time, 25 years ago. And it's kind of crazy to me that WWE didn't think to capitalize on that in some way. TNA is going to capitalize on it. Because Bully laid out the challenge and said October 12th, TNA Bound for Glory, the Hardys and the Dudleys one last time. For old time's sake, to see who the best tag team is. Even though he acknowledged the Road Warriors is the greatest tag team of all time, we're going to find out one last time who the better team is. That's a big match for them to hype up. One last time could very well be a retirement match for either one of these teams. More so probably the Dudleys than the Hardys, because the Hardys are still going strong. But that's a big match they announced tonight, the first official match that they announced for Bound for Glory. And again, if the main event of that show is not Trick Williams defending and dropping that TNA World Heavyweight Championship to Mike Santana, then this company gets all the scorn and ridicule that it deserves, because it was a boneheaded enough decision not having him win the title tonight, but to, again, drag this out even beyond Bound for Glory would be unforgivable. It really would. And would be very, very stupid. But I did have fun with this show overall. We're going to go through the entire thing. We're going to start with the pre-show. We'll work our way through all the key matches and some of the things that happened, what AJ Styles had to say. Again, a very unique experience here, being here for a live TNA review, but I dig it. I dig it. We have 1,100 people and counting, so thank you for being with me. This is your TNA Slammiversary 2025 review for July 21st, 2025. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you guys for being with me. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, if you would. Super chats are open. I got them paused there, but super chats are open. They will be popping up. There are some new ones, including a brand new Mother Wayne one, a Nick Wayne's mom super chat. It's the new $35 one. You can find it in the description down below, and we'll hang out. I'll read all of your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. Start from the top here. Tom Hannifin and Matt Raywalt, they were on the call tonight, as they are for all of these TNA shows, as they were for Genesis when I watched that show at the beginning of this year. And they started with the pre-show, which included a TNA Knockouts Tag Team Championship match. Ash by Elegance and Heather by Elegance. This is the Elegance brand, is what they call themselves. Now, they had M by Elegance in their corner, and they have the concierge. So they have, I mean, they have a whole crew here. They're defending the Knockouts titles against the Inspiration, Jess McKay and Cassie Lee. You may know them as the former Iconics from WWE. They had disappeared for a while, I think 3-year absence, but they recently returned to TNA. They themselves are former Knockouts Tag Team Champions. And you could see there were scattered empty seats on the hard cam. People were still filing in at this point. I will say, just to go back to the UBS Arena for a second, you know, they had strong walk-up for the show. I'm assuming that number that number is inclusive of everybody who was there. What the actual sold number is, I don't know. But they claimed 7,600 in the building. It seemed pretty clear, whatever the exact number is, they were going to break their record that they had set all the way back in 2013. I forgot which show it was off the top of my head. It might have been Lockdown. But there was a show back then. They had around 7,000. So it seemed pretty clear they were going to set their record. Look, I made the comment on the sound off earlier. It's kind of crazy to think, you know, TNA's been in existence since 2002. Okay, this company has been around now for 23 years. And in those 23 years, they've had some of the biggest names in the business working for TNA, right? Hogan, Flair, Sting, Nash, Booker, Foley. And not to say anything about even just their own homegrown talent that they built up. AJ Styles and Abyss and everybody else. To think that in 23 years, they never had a crowd, at least not in North America. Because I think when they were overseas in the UK once, they had maybe 10,000. But to think that they never had a crowd in North America in double digits with all of those names is just wild to me. It really is. But here we are, and this was their biggest crowd ever. So, you know, good on them. Again, they had a lot of goodwill they built up for this show, which is another reason why I think it's crazy to give people the kind of finish that you gave them on this show. Because you know there's going to be a lot of people watching this for the first time who have not watched TNA either ever or in a very long time who are like, all right, you know what? I'm going to give this show another shot. What are those people thinking at the end of the show when it goes off the air? Probably nothing good. So again, just a very questionable thing. But in this match here, late in the match, the Elegance crew, they gathered around at ringside. McKay dove out onto them. Cassie Lee then dove also from the second rope onto the heels. The challengers brought Ash by Elegance back inside, set up for their finish, but it got broken up by Heather by Elegance. Ash hit her rarefied air finish on Cassie and pinned her to retain the titles. Very basic match. I was expecting a title change. Fuck me. They retain the titles. So the lights went out after this. Eric Young comes out with the Northern Armory, Judas Icarus, and Travis Williams. And they interrupted the pre-show panel that was sitting around, bloviating and talking about various things. I know these two guys here better as Sinner and Saint. We had them in House of Glory a few months ago. They killed it. They had a great match. We're going to have to get these guys back at some point. Once they were in the ring, Eric Young heeled on the crowd in New York. He got some easy heat for that. Crowd chanted USA at him, being from Canada. Young said that the hometown man is a fraud. And he pointed out that he had his gear on. He challenged people in the crowd to come face him. He was challenging people in the crowd to hop the barricade and come fight him. All of a sudden, hometown man makes his appearance, and he's wearing a New York Islanders jersey. So let me stop here for a second, because I've only educated myself recently about this. Some of you are watching this going, who the fuck is Hometown Man? Hometown Man is Cody Deaner. Cody Deaner was sort of the lovable loser, and he lost his job in TNA a few months ago. So he's been doing this absurd masked man gimmick where every place he wrestles in, he's the Hometown Man. So tonight, Elmont, New York, was his hometown. Long Island was his hometown. Hence, Hometown Man. So we got an impromptu match between Eric Young and Hometown Man. EY set up for a pile driver late in the match. Hometown Man backdropped him. Young countered into a roll-up attempt. Hometown Boy sat down on him and got the three count. This lasted less than 3 minutes, maybe four. That's about all they needed here. Very basic shit. Now, they closed the pre-show with a six-man tag team match. Steve Macklin is the TNA International Champion. He teamed up with Jake Something, who definitely needs to have a bigger role on this show. I think he came back fairly recently from an injury. I think he even had a sleeve on his leg. But he's somebody, I think, who should have a bigger presence on this show. And Mance Warner. They were representing Team TNA. They were taking on Real One, the former Enzo Amore, Zilla Fatu, and Josh Bishop. All three men representing Westside Guns Company, Fourth Rope Promotions. Or Fourth Rope Promotion, I think it's singular. So Real One, he comes out on stage. He's got Zilla on one side. He's got Josh Bishop on the other side. You see, you like Hometown Boy, right? I think we've renamed him from now on. I like Hometown Boy. Reminds me of the Rodney Mack White Boy Challenge for some reason. Somebody mentioned that to me recently. I had forgotten all about that. TNA, you got to change his name, okay? From now on, he's officially Hometown Boy. Real One comes out here. He gets more mic time than the wrestlers had to wrestle. Like, his promo was longer than the match itself. That should not be. There's some real talented guys in this match. They got shortchanged because Enzo probably went long. And he delivered some of his old Enzo Amore catchphrases from WWE. He talked about a couple of haters. More than a couple of people in the ring, though, but a couple of haters. His material hasn't changed in many years. So he's standing out there doing his thing. Zilla was out there, I thought, looking badass. He had this face paint on that I haven't seen him with before. And Real One introduces him as the son of the late Umaga. And then he compares Josh Bishop to Sid Vicious. He's not as tall as Sid. He does, like, with the hair and everything. I made the comparison when I was doing the preview and predictions on the podcast earlier today. I said he reminds me more of Dr. D. Like, I look at him and I think of David Schultz. But Sid, I could see Sid as well. So finally, he ends this promo. And even the announcers are kind of mocking. Like, is it over? Is he done? Hannafin said that Real One was never economical with his words. So Mance Warner avoided Fatu's top rope splash. This was in the opening minute. Macklin got the better of Real One after they tagged in. Bishop chokeslammed something. That's his name, Jake something. Warner put Bishop down with a clothesline. Later on, Real One ducked a clothesline by Warner that accidentally took out Jake something. Real One then threw Warner out of the ring and then hit Eat Defeat on something before pinning him. They gave these men 3 minutes because Enzo went long with his promo. In hindsight, you know what they should have done? They should have left out Hometown Boy. That's what they should have done. There was really no need for Hometown Boy and Eric Young to be out there. You could have cut that and given these guys more time, but it is what it is. That's hindsight. So with that out of the way, it was time for the main card. So this was the opening match. It was Mustafa Ali against Cedric Alexander. Four women stood on stage holding flags while four Secret Service agents stood in front of them. Ali made his entrance. We've got the Secret Service on one show. We've got the Secret Hervis on the other. Ali's Secret Service agents remained on the stage. Alexander hit an early German suplex on the floor. Ali came back, though, and this guy went for a suicide dive. And he comes flying through. This nearly turned into a suicide. He flies out of the ring. He overshot Cedric. And he landed in a very scary way. Like, when we talk about, oh, he looked like he landed on his head. Like, he landed on his head. And he didn't just land on his head on the floor outside. Like, coming out of the ring like a bat out of hell. But he landed right at the base of the ramp. Right on the diamond plate. So it was very scary, and he collected himself. He played it off like he was okay. But then Alexander, like a minute later, dumped him from the middle rope to the floor with a Michinoku driver onto the pile of Secret Service geeks on the outside, and everybody fell down. Later on, Ali locked Alexander in a sharpshooter. Cedric, though, got to the ropes. Ali then removed the top part of the ring steps. He wanted to powerbomb Alexander onto the bottom half. Alexander, though, ended up backdropping Ali onto the flat part of the steps, and he landed, and I think he just avoided it, but he landed, it almost looked like right on the edge of the steps, like where his lower back would have met the very edge of the steps. I think he just narrowly avoided it, but that, either way, it looked like a brutal landing. So Tasha Steeles, who was out there as part of Ali's entourage, she stood up on the apron, and she started arguing with the referee. Alexander went to ringside. He's chasing Ali. He ends up getting mowed down by the Secret Service crew. And they roll Alexander back inside. Ali hits a top rope frog splash. He goes for the pin. Alexander, though, kicks out at the last moment. Tasha enters the ring. And eventually she gets ejected by the referee, right? And everybody cheers. So Ali, he runs into a cutter from Alexander, who follows up with a pair of German suplexes. Alexander suplexed the charging Ali as he was coming in and just flung him right into the top turnbuckle. Alexander fought off some interference from the agents outside. He hits Ali with a lumbar check, and he gets a good near fall out of it. Alexander now is setting up for a move on the ropes when Tasha Steelz returns, even though she was ejected. She's back now and she's got a chair. She brings a chair with her into the ring. So the referee who previously ejected her did absolutely nothing. She's watching this, doesn't do anything about this. Alexander steps on the chair before she could pick it up. Steelz, though, stands up. She takes a swing at Alexander. Alexander ducks. And Cedric Alexander gives Tasha Steelz this tremendous lumbar check that reminds me of the famous lumbar check. And I'm sure many of you have either seen the match or you've seen the clip from many, many years ago. But there is a famous lumbar check that Cedric gave to Candice LeRae on the independent scene that was unbelievable. I mean, it looked just fucking great. And just like that one, Tasha here, she flew up probably a good 5 feet into the air before landing on the mat. So that was great. This woman bounced. That's how high up she went. But Cedric didn't even have a chance to get back to his feet because as soon as he hits the lumbar check, Ali is on the top rope. He comes flying off with a 450 splash and he picks up the win. And finally, he gets that elusive win over Cedric Alexander because the announcers mentioned that he just couldn't figure this guy out. Alexander had a number of wins over him over the years, going back to their days in WWE, 205 Live. They had, a Cruiserweight Championship match on the pre-show at WrestleMania 1 year. Might have been 2018. So finally, Ali gets that win over Alexander. This was a great opener. Both guys showed up. Both guys showed out. Ali in particular, I mean, he took some really insane bumps, some really nasty bumps here in this match. He's going to be feeling that. I mean, all these guys feel the bumps when they wake up in the morning. I think he's going to be feeling it a little more than usual when he wakes up in the morning. He looked like a man on a mission out there with some of these insane bumps that he was taking. Cedric, you know who he could have used? He could have used Big Swole to kind of even the odds with Tasha. I don't know if maybe that's the direction they're going in with this. Maybe we'll see her reemerge in TNA. I guess we'll have to wait and see. We had Dark State from NXT. Dion Lennox, Osiris Griffin, Saquon Sugars, and Cutler James against Matt Cardona and The System. Eddie Edwards, Brian Myers, and JDC, the former Dirty Dango, with Alicia Edwards in their corner. Cardona got a great reaction coming out, of course. I mean, the Long Island guy. As soon as Dark State surrounds the ring, The System and Cardona. Hey, there he is. There's Joe Hendry. You're a loser. There he is. Hey, Omar, thank you. Omar, you're not a loser. I'm talking about Joe Hendry. Thank you for the sub. We got a bunch of new ones tonight. Come on in. We're just getting started here. So before I even get into this, I have been trying to keep up with NXT here and there. I have not been watching weekly like I used to, so I haven't seen too much of Dark State. But I think they've largely been protected so far. I don't know how many matches they've had where they've had the entire crew. This might be the first time they've had the entire Dark State crew together in a while, I feel like, for a match. But they come out, they surround the ring. The System in Cardona, they bring the fight right to him. And you have all eight guys brawling in and around ringside. Alicia Edwards, she slides JDC a chair. She's got a whistle she's blowing, and he's pointing up at the sky, so paying homage to Sabu, and he does the old Sabu step-up dive off the chair out to the floor. Griffin manhandled Brian Myers in the ring, and things settle down after this. Dark State took the lead. Lennox tags in. He picks up where Griffin leaves off. Sugars hits the ring and knocks Meyer's partners off the apron, so he can't tag out. And he needs to tag out, but he can't because now there's nobody there. So they drag Meyer's back to their side of the ring. They continue quick tags. Sugars ends up as the legal man for Dark State just as Cardona finally tags in. And Cardona hits the reboot for a close two count. Radio silence is avoided by Sugars as James and Lennox, they get quick tags into the match. So we got a triple team stalling powerbomb in the corner. Eddie Edwards made a last second save. The four-man powerbomb is fought off, and the system fights back with a corner powerbomb of their own. Diving leg drop by JDC. The cover, Dark State saves the match. Everyone is back to fighting everybody. Radio silence by Cardona to Sugars connects. And the Boston Knee Party by Edwards. And Team TNA prevails. I thought it was going to go the way of Dark State. I thought they were going to want to protect these guys. Yes, Ava in the chat. Timu Retribution, call them what you will. I mean, there's some talented guys in this group. You know, they're trying to get something going here. They're not the Shield. You know, but they're trying to push this new crew. Again, some of them look impressive, some more than others. I feel like they've been largely protected so far, but they took the loss here. So that kind of surprised me. The match itself, I mean, it was too short to really mean anything. The loss is not going to mean a damn thing to Dark State when they go back to NXT, for being honest. Honestly, this felt like a way to give Cardona and Myers a match on the show. This was a way to give them a Long Island homecoming. And so it achieved that. But the match itself probably went maybe 6 minutes or so. So Hanifin, oh, this was great. Tom Hanifin says, the stars are out tonight. And I'm like, man, I wonder who they have in the house here at the UBS Arena. And they show Gia Miller at ringside, and she is talking to Tim Malcolm. And I thought, holy shit, not Tim Malcolm. Who the fuck is that? And they say, oh, it's Tim Malcolm from the show 90 Day Fiancé. Boy, we are really stretching the word star, aren't we? It's bad enough when I have to watch Raw and they show some of the people in the crowd. And it's somebody from this Netflix show and that Netflix show. And I'm like, what? Never heard of this show before. Who are these people? And they'll show them on camera and they get no reaction because nobody knows who the fuck they are. More people probably know who this guy is than most of those Netflix shows. But yeah, I was not the only one who didn't either know who this guy was, or the people who did, they booed. The crowd loudly booed this guy, and he tried to explain what a big TNA fan he is, but these people in the building, they really didn't seem to care. Actually, they showed Johnny Damon in the crowd. We'll come back to him later. I know who that is. I'll bet there's a lot of Yankee fans who know exactly who that is. Fans knew who this woman was, too, based on the way they reacted to her. Tessa Blanchard was up next. She came out with Victoria Crawford in her corner, the former Alicia, or I have to say it the way that Noam Dar used to say it, Alicia Fox. He had a very, very specific way of saying it. So she was in Tessa's corner for Tessa's match against Indy Hartwell. They were playing up the past friendship between the two from many years ago. That was the story here coming into this match. Blanchard gets Hartwell to chase her in and around the ring and catches her coming in with a big shot. And we're just barely into this match. And here you can hear the chants of she's a racist. So there you go. This will follow her for the rest of her career, no matter where she goes. So the New York crowd was letting her have it. Blanchard ignores the crowd, though, because she's got a job to do, and she continues to dominate the early portion of the match. Hartwell came back later with a spine buster for a near fall. Tessa came back with a tiger driver and then acted shocked when Indy kicked out. Crowd didn't seem nearly as surprised. Hartwell hit her Hertz donut finish, although not very well. There just wasn't a lot on it. Only got a near fall out of it. Hanifin said that he didn't think Hartwell got all of it. Yeah, she didn't. Blanchard came right back with a cutter from the top rope and then hit Magnum which is her diving double knee facebreaker. Blanchard covered Hartwell, who kicked out at the last moment. That got a rise out of the crowd. And Hannafin noted that Hartwell was the first wrestler to kick out of Magnum since Blanchard came back to the company in September. Hartwell came right back by dropping Tessa across the top rope with her Hertz donut finish, and then she hit a proper Hertz donut in the ring, and she covered Tessa for the three count. This was about 15 minutes into the match. They could have shaved a few minutes off of this. This did not need 15 minutes. I thought it was solid. The crowd really didn't sound invested in it until those last few near falls near the end of the match. Then they got a little more animated. The most interesting part about this to me is Tessa losing clean. Because I went and I checked. I said, I got to check her win-loss record here in TNA. Because I'm thinking, like, how often do you see that? How often does she get beat clean? You know, 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring. The answer is not very often. But she did the clean job here in this match. She's also since, and I'll talk about what Santino mentioned later in the show, but she has since been indefinitely suspended. So it's very interesting on a show where you know there's a lot of WWE eyes on this show. Higher-ups in WWE are paying very close attention. They're watching, if not at the show. I don't know. It's just very, it's a very interesting situation there. Now, after the match, Gia Miller spoke with Indy Hartwell at ringside and asked her, so what's next? And she was about to mention going after the Knockouts champion when Tessa blindsided her. Miller tried to stop Tessa, who yelled at her and went right back to beating on Indy. So Gia, who's not a wrestler, she tried to stop Tessa from beating her up. Blanchard then attacked Gia Miller and slammed her head on the ring steps. Victoria Crawford worked over Hartwell in the meantime. So security had to run out to put a stop to all the chaos. And I thought Hannafin and Ray Walt on commentary, they played this up huge. They acted appalled by what they were seeing. This woman is our colleague. What are you doing? She's not a wrestler. So, and Gia Miller didn't really play this up so, like she was dead so much as she was traumatized as they assisted her to the back. Speaking of traumatizing, there's going to be some traumatized production people who work for TNA in the truck after this next segment on this show. I cannot believe that this aired on this pay-per-view. It would not be a TNA show without at least one LOL TNA moment. And you could argue that the finish of tonight's show was an LOL TNA moment. But this was the mother of all TNA moments on this show when it comes to LOL TNA. So they aired highlights of the Elegance brand earlier on the pre-show, retaining their Knockouts tag team titles, right? And then they cut backstage. They cut backstage live to Dana Brooke, or again, Ash by Elegance, and her crew. And actually, it was probably a pre-tape, but it almost doesn't even matter. The problem is, if it was live, right, they had no idea that they were live. Because they're standing around. They're just standing around, and they're talking amongst themselves, and it looks like they're getting ready for their segment. And I can hear production people talking and giving them cues, almost like counting them down, like they're about to go live. Or, okay, we're just about ready, you know, to do the shot, to do the promo. And I haven't seen enough of the Elegance brand, so part of me is watching this going, okay, there's no way, right? They have to know. Is this part of their gimmick? That they're, I don't know, like just completely full of themselves, or they think they're Hollywood or whatever, and Is this how their segments usually go? Like, I'm watching this and I can't believe that they haven't cut away from this yet, because this is going on for several seconds. And they're showing this. And again, you could hear the, okay, get ready, you know, 3, 2, 1. And then they start acting all happy and they start acting all giddy because, again, they won their match earlier in the show. And I'm like, holy shit, this was not supposed to air. How did this make the show? It's like, if it was an episode of Impact, I would feel the same way because that's a taped show. Like, if something like this ended up in that show, right? It's like, how the hell does this end up in that show? Here we're live. It's a pay-per-view. But it felt like, it was probably only like 8 to 10 seconds, right, before the segment started. But it felt like an eternity. And I was like, I had secondhand embarrassment just sitting here watching this. Like, I felt bad for everybody that I was looking at on camera who had no idea. So it either aired live or it was a pre-tape and somebody forgot to chop off the beginning of it and edit that part out. So it just aired. It's like that segment with Sid on that one pay-per-view pre-show that WWE did many years ago where he was cutting a promo and he's like, he fucked up. He goes, oh, let's do it again. And Jim Ross is like, we're live, pal. And he has just finished the promo. I'm like, ah. But like, total amateur hour here. I can't believe this aired. Anyway, once the segment kicked in, they were confronted by the Inspiration, who were mad about M by Elegance, right? She's the redhead that's with them, getting involved in their match. And they tease that they have a friend in high places for a trios match on Impact coming up this Thursday. I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers the JR. Hey, we're live, pal. Oh my God. So then, it was the winner takes all, title for title, championship match. We had the TNA Knockouts champion, Masha Slamovich, against the NXT Women's Champion, JC Jane, out with the other members of Fatal Influence. Early in the match, they cut to a shot backstage of some TNA rest. I saw Jake Something was there. Some of the guys that wrestled on the pre-show, other production staff and production people, they're watching this match, right? They're really trying to hype this up like it's us against them. Like, we've got to win. This is a big deal, right? Everybody, it's like a sellout at the monitor in the back. Slamovich was on offense for a bit after I spent the first 5 minutes or so of the match selling. JC Jane, though, regained control, and she pulled Masha off the ropes with a hurricanrana. JC then drilled Masha with a running knee strike that led to a near fall. I'm watching this match, and the crowd just sounds quiet for such a big match. This is winner take all, right? WWE against TNA, or NXT against TNA. I mean, at this point, it's all WWE. Look at the branding and the marketing, by the way, for most of these NXT shows now. They don't even brand them as NXT shows. They got a Heatwave show coming up on August 24th. It's called WWE Heatwave. They don't even use the NXT branding. So anyway, the crowd just seemed kind of dead for a good chunk of this match, which was kind of surprising to me. But anyway, we get to the point now where Fallon Henley, a Fatal Influence, slides the NXT championship into the ring. The referee, though, takes it away. That allows Jasmine Nix, the other member of Fatal Influence, to hand the Knockouts title, because there's two of them. So she hands the Knockouts title to JC Jane, and she blasts Masha in the back of the head with the belt. Covers her. Again, the referee did not see what just happened. Slamovich kicks out. Right now, we get signs of life here, not only from Masha, but from the crowd. Slamovich makes a comeback, had JC down. Henley and Nix distract the referee. Here comes Zaya Brookside, and here comes another woman. I'm like, who is that? I'm like, oh shit, it's Zaya Lee. I forgot that she was in TNA. So here she comes down to the ring, and they're there to fight off Jasmine Nix and Fallon Henley. So the referee then was taken out by an errant super kick to the chest. So there's your ref bump. Slamovich hits the snowplow on JC Jane, gets the visual pin, but that's all she gets, because there's no referee to count the fall. And at this point in the match, I'm already like, okay, because I had predicted a Masha win here. And I'm like, once I saw the visual pin coupled with the announcers really focusing early on the fact that Masha has multiple wins now over JC, like multiple pinfall wins over her, like I knew my goose was cooked. Like I knew exactly where this was headed at this point. So she's got the visual pin. Here comes a second referee. Slides into the ring to make the count. JC Jane kicks out. JC then catches Slamovich with her rolling encore finish after Masha gets up. And to her credit, it looked great. It really did look like a knockout shot. And Masha sold it like fucking death. So she goes down. JC Jane covers her. And JC Jane pins Masha Slamovich to become the brand new TNA Knockouts champion, on top of her already being the NXT Women's Champion. And yes, JC Jane is now a champion in two different promotions. After the match, we had TNA president Carlos Silva. He brought the Knockouts Championship to the apron before he could even get into the ring to present it to her. JC swiped it away from him and started laughing in his face and celebrating. And Hannafin noted that both top TNA championships, at least for the moment, belong to NXT wrestlers. Again, for such an important match, it just felt very heatless for a good chunk of it. The near falls kind of brought people into it there towards the end. I got to give credit to JC Jane. I thought she held her own here, and they had a good match. I mean, if you could ignore the blatant interference and bullshit at the end, I thought as a match, they were having a good, not a great match, but they were having a good match. They gave Masha the visual pin, whatever that's going to be worth. I guess that's their way of just protecting her and showing that she had the win and the referee wasn't up. So it sort of protects her in a way. But it also it gave me hope as I'm watching this that, okay, we're going to get a title change in the main event because surely, I mean, come on, they're not going to put both belts on NXT talents, right? You got to give them something here. So if JC Jane is a double champion, then I'm sure Mike Santana is leaving New York as the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion, surely. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor Form. A couple of years back, I tried a green supplement for the first time. I didn't even really know what they were, but I knew it would be good for my health, so I figured, well, let's give this a shot. And I swear, I wanted to gag. I said never again. But I'm glad I reconsidered, because the first time I gave Factor Form's Daily Greens a chance, it was night and day. It's one thing to tolerate something that you think is good for you, even if it tastes terrible, but it's better to find something you actually enjoy that doesn't taste like grass. That's what I was able to find with Daily Greens by Factor Form. Factor Form has changed the game in that respect. As the sister brand to Factor Meals, which you've heard me talk about here on this podcast, Factor Form was designed to work hand in hand with your meals, making better nutrition a breeze. Daily Greens is a greens powder by Factor Form that in one scoop delivers 100% of your daily nutrients, filling in nutrient gaps, supporting whole body health, and helping you feel your very best. With a refreshing, citrusy, smooth taste that's actually enjoyable to drink, you simply mix a single serve pack with water and you're good to go. It's nice to have a greens drink that doesn't taste like I'm licking a chalkboard. Daily Greens by Factor Form is made from real vegetables, packed with a whole serving of kale and spinach without tasting like it. In fact, in a blind taste test, Daily Greens ranked number one in taste, texture, and aroma, beating out the biggest names in the industry. Factor Form's Daily Greens is packed with prebiotics, probiotics, and adaptogens to support gut health and reduce bloating. There's no added sugar and no artificial fillers. Just whole food ingredients that work, so much so that 88% of users experienced improved digestion and gut health. I've been trying it out myself recently, and it's infinitely better than some of the others that I've tried before. Within days, you'll feel more energetic, less bloated, and your mind will be sharper. It's a daily habit that doesn't feel like a chore. It feels like a necessity. Start your day right with Daily Greens by Factor Form at factor75.com/solomonster to get 40% off plus free shipping on your first order. That's factor75.com/solomonster for 40% off plus free shipping. factor75.com/solomonster. We had Moose against Leon Slater for the X Division Championship, with Slater looking to become the youngest X Division champion of all time. I believe they said the youngest X Division champion since The Amazing Red, who I believe was there. I believe he was backstage visiting at the show. Shout out to The Amazing Red. Moose has held that title since October. He's been a very dominant champion. If you remember the battle he had at Roadblock at the theater in Madison Square Garden back in March on NXT against NXT champion. Great match. Both guys, right? Both guys had a great showing in that match. Obafemi looked great. Moose was very impressive in that match. So he's just been on this dominant run. And Leon Slater, obviously he has a huge size advantage over Leon Slater. Leon Slater's like 20 years old. So he was the clear underdog coming into this match. So Moose is manhandling him from the word go here. And on the floor, he hoists up Slater in a powerbomb position with his body draping. And he swings him side to side. He's trying to bash him into the ring apron. And instead, Slater flips to his feet, and then leaps a charging Moose, who ends up smashing into the ring steps. So now with Moose's shoulder weakened, Slater takes over on offense. He hits some high spots back inside the ring. Slater knocks Moose out to the floor. He does his sprinting leap over the ring post out to the floor. Moose takes over again, and they show Slater's family was there, by the way. So they showed his mom, they showed his sister, his girlfriend in the crowd. Slater begins fighting back. He got the much larger Moose up on his shoulders in a torture rack. He did an airplane spin with him and then put him down with a blue thunder bomb. Slater then gave Moose a taste of his own medicine, and he speared him. Slater then went up top, and he hit his Swanton 450, which is a very cool move, but Moose kicked out of the pin attempt. Hannafin noted that nobody in TNA had kicked out of the Swanton 450. Yeah, nobody should be kicking out of the Swanton 450. Slater threw super kicks at Moose, who was kneeling. Slater then went for a springboard move. Moose shot up to his feet, and he speared him out of midair. He rolled to the floor, though, and so Moose followed him outside. He went for another spear, but as he came in, Slater countered with a code red on the floor, and we got another amazing red mention here. So Slater rolled Moose back inside, and he went up top, right? He's getting ready for another Swanton 450. Moose knows this, so he slowly rolls away. Just far enough away where he can't quite do the move, and as he's laying there, Moose looks up at him, and he flips him the double bird. And do you know what Leon Slater said? I don't know what he said because I couldn't hear it, but Leon Slater is looking down at this guy and goes, all right. And he comes flying off with a regular Swanton, clears half the ring, lands on Moose. Then he pops right back up, goes up to the top in the opposite corner, and now he hits a proper Swanton 450. And that put Moose away. We have a brand new X Division champion, the youngest X Division champion now in the history of the company. And his name is Leon Slater. Easily the best thing on the entire show up to this point. And now that the show is over, I could tell you that it was the best thing on the show, period, was this match here with that feel-good win. The underdog finds a way to win. Everybody in the crowd was very happy. He went to the crowd. He went over to his family. He's celebrating with his mom and his girlfriend and his sister, and it's this great moment. And he's back in the ring. And it was also an excellent showcase for one of the fastest rising young stars in this company. And I look at a guy like Leon Slater, and he is the embodiment of what that X Division was when it was initially conceived, right? Because you had a lot of guys that looked like him who were smaller, right? They were not on the bigger side, but they could fly around and they can do all of these amazing, innovative things that we hadn't seen before. And people loved it, right? That's what made the X Division so much fun. Right, it's not about weight limits. It's about no limits. He reminds me of a throwback to what the division was really founded upon. And he's just a fun guy to watch. So that's why it works so well. And that's why I think it was so great putting him over in a strong way like they did here on this show. When the match was over, again, he's back in the ring. Carlos Silva is coming back in the ring to present him with the championship. Moose goes over and takes the title away from Carlos. What's he going to do? What he does is he says, I'm going to strap this belt around this young man's waist. A show of respect, even though Moose is a heel, show of respect from Moose for the new champion. Again, putting him over. He put him over by laying on his back and taking the loss, but now he's putting him over in a different kind of way. And they weren't done putting over Leon Slater. This was just the tip of the iceberg for him. Moose leaves. Right? Leon's in the ring by himself and he's celebrating. And all of a sudden we hear, get ready to fly. And everybody in the UBS arena comes alive because they know exactly what that means. And the Tron is up. Here comes AJ Styles. This is the reason why they moved so many tickets late in the last week once the announcement was made. And they were able to break that record tonight at UBS because of this man. And AJ comes out. He's got a vest on. He's doing the AJ pose, got the old music playing, everybody's going nuts. AJ gets into the ring, and he had a moment with Leon Slater, and he says, TNA, did you miss me? And everybody cheered, got a loud welcome back chant here from the fans. Styles acknowledged Slater's win. Crowd started chanting, you deserve it. Styles said, no. He goes, you don't deserve it. He told Slater, don't listen to that. You don't deserve it. And he walks right up to him and he goes, you earned it. That's how Paul Bearer got the urn. I had to do it. I'm sorry. I just watched WrestleMania 8 like 2 weeks ago and I heard Bobby Heenan say it. I mean, how could I not? How could I not? So anyway, he said that you earned it. And everybody, I'm such a fucking idiot. So everybody cheered. Styles thanks Slater for reminding him why he loves this business. Then there was a welcome back chant that started that AJ cut off to say that, look, I want to talk about Slater first. And this is also where the fans started chanting one more match. And he quickly pivoted and said, we'll address that after. We'll talk about that later. Styles said that Slater showed that it's not about weight limits. It's about no limits. Styles said that that was the foundation when he started. That was the foundation when he started. He mentioned Samoa Joe, and he mentioned Christopher Daniels, and he mentioned Amazing Red, Jerry Lynn, and Homicide, and all the Frankie Kazarian, all those guys. Styles said the X Division is in phenomenal hands. Said Slater made history, and the next step is for him to make his legacy. I thought, honestly, for a moment there, I thought AJ was about to challenge him. Like, not for a match now, but like on a future show, like you and me for the X Division title. I thought that would have been a fucking great match. But he didn't do that. And he introduced Slater as the brand new X Division champion and raised his hand. Styles theme played while he and Slater played to the crowd and they hugged. And that was it. We didn't see AJ Styles again for the rest of the show. I know there were going to be some people who are going to be disappointed. Like, that's it? Like, that was what all the hype was about? His first TNA appearance in 11 years, and this is what you did with him? But, okay, what did you expect, though? I could see where people maybe would be disappointed they didn't shoot some kind of an angle to lead to a match, but it's not confirmed that AJ is going to come back and have a TNA match. I think he will. I don't know if it'll be Bound for Glory. I mean, if they really want to stack that show, you got the Hardys and the Dudleys last time ever. You could have an AJ Styles match on that show. You could have a Mike Santana win in the main event. Like, if they really wanted to load that Bound for Glory show up, they could. But we don't know. We don't know what the status is of an AJ Styles match or if WWE is going to allow him to do it. So we knew he wasn't coming out to have a match on this show. He could have come out during the main event to kind of correct things. And I mean, what would he have done? You know, trick one fair and square. What was he going to do? You know, it'd be like Bret Hart coming out at Starrcade and punch the referee in the face, even though he counted three like a normal referee. And then you look like a fucking idiot. There was really nothing else for AJ to do on this show that was obvious other than cut the promo and say, hey, it's good to be back and blah, blah, blah. What they had him do was put over Leon Slater. Like, you cannot say that TNA did not go out of their way to put this young guy over tonight. He beat Moose. He won the championship. Moose strapped the belt around his waist. And then to cap it all off, AJ Styles comes out. You get to share the ring with AJ in his return to TNA in front of almost 8,000 people. AJ's putting him over on the microphone. I mean, this is great. So I thought that was actually a great way to use AJ in this situation. I hope he comes back. I hope he does a match. I hope he does more. But for tonight, it was about getting Leon Slater over in front of their biggest audience in the best possible way that they could. You want people to look at this kid and think this guy's a star. This guy, okay, I could see what's going on here, right? They really think the world of this guy. He must be something special, especially if you're someone who's tuning in for the first time. So I actually thought their usage of him here was great. Use the stars of the past to help put over the stars of the future. That's how it should be done. Now we had the four-way ladder match coming up next for the TNA World Tag Team titles. Ryan and Nick Nemeth, reigning champions, defending their titles against the Hardys. First Class, which is AJ Francis and Casey Navarro, who's wrestling with a knee injury. And what was supposed to be the Rascals. Zachary Wentz was out there. Trey Miguel was not. Trey Miguel was pulled. He was supposed to have hernia surgery. I think he was going to gut through the match. He ended up, I don't know if he pulled himself because he realized he couldn't do it, or if they pulled him, he just wasn't medically cleared, but he wasn't cleared. So he got pulled, and they put Myron Reed in there in his place. And I talked about this on the Sound Off earlier today. Best wishes to Trey Miguel. Not only is he dealing with hernia surgery that either he will have or has already had, I don't know. But he tweeted, I guess it was last week, that his uncle fell off a ladder, fell on his head. He's in a medically induced coma. He's like a second father to him. He's been very close to him his whole life. He's had his own family tragedy that's been documented before. So he's going through a rough time right now. So spare a thought for Trey Miguel. So that was the collection of teams that we had here. The Hardys on Impact this week said that if we don't win the tag team titles back here, maybe it's time for the Hardy party to be over. They all but told you that if we don't win the titles back, we're going to retire, from at least from TNA. And to me, that kind of gave away the store as far as, you know, how things were going to go here. But this was all the chaos of a ladder match like this that you would expect within the first 60 seconds of this match. Oh, wait. Maddie says, was there a cash prize in this match? I didn't see the announcement of a cash prize. No, the titles were on the line. You didn't need a cash prize. This was not the $400,000 all-star ladder match. So, no. No cash prize. So within the first 60 seconds of this match, we see multiple ladders brought in. At one point, Ryan Nemeth got up in Johnny Damon's face at ringside. Damon gave him a shove. Nick Nemeth had to come over to intervene and hold his brother back. AJ Francis is going to be one of the stories coming out of, if not the story, frankly, coming out of this match. AJ Francis at one point hit a moonsault off of a ladder. Now, all of this was in the ring. The ladder was in the ring. AJ was in the ring. Everybody else he dove onto was in the ring. I don't want to make it sound like he did a fucking dive from the top of the ladder to the floor. Fucking 450. Yeah, he wasn't on the tippy top of the ladder, but still. I mean, AJ France is doing a moonsault off a ladder. Good for him. I mean, that's an impressive spot. Moments later, though, Francis and Casey Navarro, they were both climbing up the same ladder in the ring. And it got tipped over. And both men went flying out of the ring onto a pair of ladder bridges outside on like the aisle side. And they go flying out of the ring. And AJ Francis took this horrendous bump. He came straight down, like the long way, where his legs and his feet went through, like right through the rungs of the ladder. Now, I want you to picture this. If you are coming straight down, there is a ladder laid flat, and you've got the rungs of the ladder, and you come down straight, and you put your legs through the rungs, what do you think is going to stop your momentum? Where is your momentum going to be stopped? In the crotchal area. Yes, his nutsack came straight down onto the ladder. And he had a look on his face like he was not having a very good time. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, that was the first thing I noticed, but I also noticed that the way he landed, he could have wrecked his fucking knees. So he's lucky he didn't fucking tear his ACL or something, but he went nutsack first through the ladder. So I don't know if he was, I mean, my immediate concern was if he's planning on having any more kids, that just ended. I don't think that's going to be happening. It was brutal. It looked brutal. And even worse, to make matters worse, talk about rubbing salt on the wound. The first shot they showed the production team was a fan in the crowd laughing. Like he has a look on his face like he's in agony. And the first thing we see in the crowd is somebody laughing at his expense. So the Hardys put the Rascals on top of two more ladder bridges on a different side of the ring. So from the apron and the sideways ring steps, you got two more ladder bridges. Jeff Hardy goes up top. He's going to hit a Swanton Bomb onto both these men, onto both of these ladders. And he comes flying off and he crushes them, but the ladders don't break. And Jeff sort of bounces off. Well, that's not good enough for Jeff Hardy. So he's going to go back up. He tries again, and still, these fucking ladders won't break. Although on the second time, the two of them rolled off the bridges. So now Jeff has the production crew lower a ladder. Now, we don't know initially what he's doing. He's just calling for someone to push a button and do something. All of a sudden, this ladder falls from... It's one of these ladders that you would see if you were doing like a helicopter rescue. One of these really flimsy ladders. Like, I think Hannafin on commentary made the comment like it's something out of fucking Adam West's Batman show from 1966. That's exactly what it was. So they drop one of these ladders from the ceiling. Now, I'll give them points for creativity because this is a spot that we've never seen before in a ladder match, right? And it's hard to think of new things to do because everything's been done. Like, what else can you do? So they thought of something different. I've not seen this before in a ladder match. Jeff gets in the ring. He starts to climb it, but the Nemeths cut him off. Matt swats Ryan down with a chair shot. Nick climbs the ladder. Jeff pulls him down. And the Hardys wrap the heads of each Nemeth brother inside of a chair, and then they hit them with stereo twist of fate. At that point, Jeff climbs the hanging ladder. He pulls the titles down one by one. He pulled the first title down, and the match was over. He still hadn't pulled the second one down yet because he had a bitch of a time pulling the first one down. But then he pulls the second one down. The match is over. The Hardys have regained the tag team titles. And before he climbs down from this ladder, Jeff is hanging from the ladder and he does his dance. He's doing the Jeff Hardy dance. At least this time his brother wasn't being murdered at the same time. The spot that I will certainly take away from this match will, yes, Yambag Jones. Yes, it will be poor AJ Francis. But the match itself, again, it was every chaotic multi-man ladder match that you have probably seen with some innovative stuff mixed in like the hanging ladder from the ceiling. It was just a fun car crash match, which is what it was designed to be. And I knew the Hardys were getting the belts back the minute they put their careers on the line on Impact on Thursday night. It just seemed like the obvious play here. How could this go any other way? And when I thought Trey Miguel was still going to be wrestling in the match, I said, well, the Rascals aren't winning because the guy's going in for hernia surgery after the pay-per-view. So I never expected they were going to win. It was really either the Nemeths retain or the Hardys win. And if you're TNA, you can get a lot more mileage out of putting those belts back on the Hardys, right? I mean, to me, that's going to be better for business if you put the belts back on Matt and Jeff because they're still super over. So that's what they did. But didn't make... I mean, again, it telegraphed the outcome, but it didn't make the match any less fun. But we weren't done yet, because when it's over, they're celebrating. Bully Ray's music hits. They show Team 3D on the screen. You see the logo, and out comes Bully Ray. There's no Devon, but Bully Ray walks out. They had the whole Busted Open crew there, right? Tommy Dreamer was there on the pre-show. Dave LaGreca was there. So I didn't see Baron Corbin or Mark Henry anywhere. I guess Mark Henry's with WWE, but... here comes Bully Ray. Comes down to the ring. He's dressed in all black. He joins the Hardys inside. He congratulates them on winning another tag team championship and then sarcastically says, you guys are catching up. He said that they're one of the reasons that this was a record-setting attendance night for the company. Bully looked at Jeff and he added that it was a record that we set in 2013. Bully said 25 years ago, the Hardys and the Dudleys made history here in New York City, or in New York City, with their tables match at Madison Square Garden. That was the Royal Rumble in 2000. Bully said that they would agree, probably the greatest tag team of all time is the Road Warriors. The Dudleys and Hardys also have a lot of championships to their name, but this was about giving the fans that last great tag team match of all time. And he then challenged the Hardys to face Team 3D in one last match at Bound for Glory on October 12th. And the crowd started chanting, where is Devon? Which is a good question. And Bully said, it's a great point. It's a great question. He said the fans would hear Devon get the tables one last time at Bound for Glory. And Matt and Jeff shook hands with Bully to accept the challenge. And again, it's the 25-year anniversary of a lot of classic matches that these two teams were a part of. So it only makes sense to capitalize on that in some way. I'm kind of surprised that WWE wouldn't do it. I mean, it's not like WWE didn't use the Hardys back at Roadblock. I mentioned Roadblock before back in March. TNA is going to get the match. And when they say like one last match, I could see this being the last time that we will ever see the Dudleys together in the ring. Because D-Von doesn't really wrestle anymore. Not much anyway. So if D-Von's coming out of what seems to be retirement or semi-retirement, it's probably just to do this one match and just be done. Bully will probably continue to wrestle sporadically because he still does a lot of appearances. But it may well be the last time we see the Dudleys in the ring. So to be able to do that match one last time, Hardys have the tag team titles. Are the titles going to be on the line? Maybe. It is a big attraction for them to be able to market for Bound for Glory. You know, it's a smart play, tie it into the 25-year anniversary. I mean, WWE has had Trish Stratus out there a couple times this year in the ring for her 25-year anniversary. We just saw her challenge for the Women's Championship at Evolution last weekend. So it's a smart play by TNA, especially if they're looking to sell as many tickets as they can. They're going to be in Lowell, Massachusetts for that show. So it's a big match. First match already made official for Bound for Glory. After this, Santino Morella was on stage to announce that Tessa Blanchard, or as he said, Tessa Blanchard, has been indefinitely suspended after her awful conduct earlier in the show. He asked the other pre-show panelists who were out there on stage with him for their predictions for the main event. Dave LaGreca picked Mike Santana. He jinxed it. Tommy Dreamer was about to give us his prediction, but he got cut off by Frankie Kazarian's music. Kazarian came out and he said that he didn't give a damn about Dreamer's prediction or the prediction of anyone from his stupid-ass Mark radio show. He said he was going to take a seat at ringside to do commentary for the main event. That is what we are now going to discuss because it was main event time. Snow Dog says D-Von's like, what match? It'd be kind of funny if this is the first D-Von's hearing about this. Fucking phone is blowing. He has flown. His phone is blowing up right now. He's like, what are you talking about? I didn't agree to anything. I believe, did D-Von have a heart attack a few years ago? I thought he did. That would actually, though, be hilarious if, like, they didn't even clue him in. He's first learning of it, like, peer pressure, man. That's been announced. You got to do it now. You can't back out now. There's no more Dudleys left if you don't do it. Well, I guess Spike Dudley's around, though, right? Big Dick Dudley is gone. Spike Dudley's around. I guess they could always sub Spike in there. Spike does not need to be back in the ring. My God. Can you imagine how many concussions that guy has had over the years? Holy shit. The main event was Trick Williams defending the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Joe Hendry and Mike Santana. Joe Hendry's theme hits. Out he comes. Fans are singing along. They're swaying. Mike Santana, they show him. He usually enters through the crowd. He's on the concourse somewhere. He's kneeling. He's praying. There is a rap artist in the ring who is rapping him out to the ring. So Santana comes out on the concourse, and he comes down through the crowd. These are his people here. Everyone's very excited. They're I would say, fully behind him. Joe Hendry has his fans too, but like they are behind Mike Santana. This building had a certain vibe, and I wasn't even in the building, but you could see it. You can sense it. This building had a vibe where it's like, tonight's the night. This is Mike Santana's night. Everything has been building to this moment. He's in New York. His family is there. His friends are there. His people are here. This is Santana's night. You could see the emotion on his face. We then shoot back to the stage because we have one person left to come out. There's a choir, and they begin church style singing Whoop That Trick, which is just funny to me that you have a bunch of people you would see at church and they're going Whoop That Trick over and over again. So this eventually transitions into Trick's actual theme song, and the choir sings over the song. And then we got the big time ring intros because it is a championship match. Hendry and Santana, they got Trick out of the picture very early. Santana looks for Spin the Block, doesn't get it. Trick nails him from behind after re-entering the ring. So after some more action, Kazarian, who's, again, sitting at ringside doing commentary, he gets involved. Like, on Trick's behalf. And Tom Hannafin just explodes. He calls him a son of a bitch. What are you doing? This is our chance to win the title back. What are you doing? He's a traitor. You know, he's just popping off on this guy. So this led to Kazarian being ejected by the referee. The production team missed Santana hitting a flip dive out onto Williams on the floor. Hendry followed up with a dive of his own out onto both men. Williams stayed down, and the referee called for the doctor or the trainer to come over. Trick might be injured. Meanwhile, Santana and Hendry, they continue fighting inside the ring. Hendry avoids the spin the block lariat, puts Santana down. Hendry then follows up with his standing ovation chokeslam for a near fall. And the fans are chanting, Santana, Santana, like they're trying to will Mike Santana back into this match. Williams could be seen in the background. Trick Williams is being held up by two officials. They're kind of backing slowly down the aisle, but they're not really leaving. I'm looking at Trick. He's got to do a better job of selling this kind of thing. At no point did I honestly believe this guy was hurt. He literally had a look on his face like, okay, I'm waiting for my cue to get back into this match. He wasn't even selling any kind of it. There was no pain on his face. He didn't look upset. Like there was just nothing. And you know what the weirdest thing is? And what really just didn't make any sense? There was a point here where in the ring, Santana catches Hendry with spin the block, right? Like the action is continuing in the ring and the match could well have ended right there. But Trick was content to just stand in the aisle way. But again, like he's waiting for just the right cue to make his way back into the room. Like, you idiot, the match could have ended right there. I think they even did a near fall spot. Like, what the fuck is he standing over there for? He's clearly going to come back into the ring any minute. Santana catches him, though, with spin the block. He hits the move again, and he goes for the pin. And this time, Trick Williams returns. He grabs Mike Santana. He throws him out of the ring. He covers Joe Hendry, and he gets the pin to retain the championship. An absolute dog shit ending to an otherwise, I think, pretty fun show. But you'll know, Santana was not the one to take the losing fall in this match. They protected him by showing you that he had this match won. And Trick snuck up like a thief in the night and stole it away from him. It should have been his championship. It should have been his crowning moment. And it was taken away from him. So they went out of their way to basically tell you that. So now, here we are yet again. We've been through this before. It happened last year at Slammiversary. It happened to Bound for Glory. And it just happened again. You've been TNA'd. It felt like the right moment. It really did. Sometimes you gotta strike when that moment just feels right. And in front of this crowd, in this city, on this night, especially on a night where you already gave your other key championship to an NXT talent, to have the existing NXT champion retain in the way that he did was such a slap in the face if you are a TNA fan. That's why I said, I don't get mad about it, but I can understand if you're a TNA fan why you would be fuming and you would be very upset and disappointed by that finish. Bound for Glory is their next big show. It's coming up in October. Mike Santana needs to win the championship on that show. Short of them booking a venue in New York City and doing something in January or something like that, where it's like, okay, we want him to win the title in New York City in one of the five boroughs. Short of anything like that, it's Bound for Glory or bust. I mean, seriously. Some people are going to look at this show and say, this was a bust. Bound for Glory needs to be his crowning moment. There is a way that you can do this and keep people invested in such a way that they are firmly behind Mike Santana. You can really build up genuine interest in seeing him go in there and kill Trick Williams. But there's got to be some cooperation here where you really, I think you have to shoot some kind of an angle where the TNA talents just say no more. And they start showing up uninvited to the Performance Center and trying to break in and trying to get in and trying to get at these people. Who screwed them over? Masha Slamovich was fucked over by Fatal Influence. Mike Santana was fucked over by Trick Williams. It may have been legal, but it was still kind of an underhanded, tacky thing for him to do, and he feels like he's let down the entire company. this should have been his moment. He had the chance to bring the gold home and he failed to do it. So now they got to get angry and they got to get serious and there has to be this sense of urgency. And so, and you could have some fun with it too, but it can't just be business as usual. You know, if they could come up with a way to do that, it could make for some interesting television. But at this moment, as I sit here and probably a lot of other fans were sitting in that building tonight, I mean, I got a text message from somebody who was there with you know, a couple of kids, and he was there at the show, and he was saying, you know, really? I stayed the whole time for this? This is what I sat through here all these hours, and I was so excited to come to the show, just got tickets this weekend, and, like, this is how it ends? Like, AJ didn't come back out? Like, that's the real finish? I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's what you get. The rest of the show, again, fun show. It's a shame it had such a dog shit ending, though. And as we sit here right now, Trick Williams and JC Jane, those are your two top champions in TNA wrestling. They don't even have a TNA contract. This is the relationship with WWE. WWE has been greatly beneficial to TNA. You saw it tonight. Even just having AJ Styles do a brief promo on the show, just the promise of him being there got them over the finish line to where they broke their own attendance record. Carlos Silva has talked about them being in the 60 to 90 day window where they expect to close very soon on a new media rights deal. And he thinks that they can get up to $10 million a year in rights fees. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but I would imagine that the WWE connection and Nick Khan maybe are going to play a role in whatever deal they get. They probably will get a media rights deal soon, and that can be huge for TNA. But with the good comes the not so good, and you have moments like this where it just feels like, man, this company really is being treated like a second-class citizen here. And if you're a TNA fan, you just sort of have to just deal with it because this is the way it is. One day, WWE is going to own this company outright. But there are pros and there are cons to this partnership. And you saw one of those cons, I think, in the main event tonight. I just hope when they finally pull the trigger and do the title change, hopefully in October, that it's worth it, you know, and they can really make it out to be a big deal. And that they did, you know, hopefully it's not a situation where it really feels like they missed the window when we look back and go, man, you know, that Slammiversary show, man, at UBS, that really was the night to do it. It's a shame about that ending, but I had fun watching this show. Will they get AJ Styles back for an actual match? That's the other question. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Slammiversary 2025? 59.4% thumbs up, 40.6% thumbs down. So a thumbs up score, but that's not a terribly enthusiastic one. I'm guessing the main event finish had a lot to do with that. That would be my guess. Understandable. I feel your pain. This was fun, though. Doing a rare TNA stream here. I still can't get over that production snafu, though, with the Elegance crew. Oh, man. I still can't get over that. I cannot get over how that aired. By the way, we're at 521 likes, which is awesome. So we are doing Be the Booker. Let's see if we can get that up to 550 at least. So we're going to do Be the Booker. Get those super chats on in because I'm going to read them right now. And then we will do some Be the Booker. Maybe we'll land on Mike Santana. Maybe we'll book him to win our main event tonight. We'll start with the real CS, who is not on this list. I'm going to start with our early folks here. Says, what's this? Solomons are doing a live review for TNA. I know. Can you believe it? It's actually the second pay-per-view I've bought this year. The first review wasn't live, though. I did it on the sound, though. But this is the first live review. We got Roko Will 23. In my opinion, Carmelo Hayes should be in the position that Trick Williams is in. I don't see Trick as a top tier talent. His world title run seems forced. Carmelo Hayes should definitely be in a better position than he's in. I think Trick is doing okay in the role they have him in now. I think Carmelo needs to be doing better, though, on SmackDown. Hey, Ms. Watson. Thank you. I love your right back. Solo botched. Yeah. But still not as bad as they botched, though, with that backstage segment, right? Solomonster sounding like a man in witness protection.
I won't give my actual name, but if I tell you the things that I've seen, it could cost me my life.
Thank you, brother. Boots. Hardy Boys Hogan are champs. Hardy Boys Hogan. Are we just adding Hogan to last names again? Is that what we're doing? Hardy Boys Hogan are champs again? Austin Sanders. I think TNA actually did die at some point, and WWE is wearing its skin. Wow. It's like the thing. They've kind of morphed into them, right? The shapeshifter. Jay Bordeaux says, LOL, TNA is eternal. Great partnership, huh? Sean Nielsen with 51 months of membership. Happy Sunday, everyone. Yes, it is now Monday morning, but happy Sunday, everyone. Sounded like nails. Oh my God, you know what?
Boss man. Boss man. You cost me 6 years of my life, boss man.
Had to listen to that for months until he tried to kill Vince McMahon, and that was the end of nails. We didn't have to see him again after that. Oh my God, is it really the man himself? Is it Sidro? Has Sidro returned? I feel like this is the Coldplay concert all over again. Sidro's hanging out with us here, and then he's going to pop up on the big screen, and JD's going to find out, and Sidro's going to be like, oh no, I've cheated. You forgot about me, huh? Sloppy seconds over here. He says, why is Billy Joel's laundry still wet? Because he didn't start the dryer. And what's a whiskey drinker's favorite car? A Suburban. A Suburban. Hashtag I love you solo. Hey, Nick, I'm glad I made your day. At least I made someone's day. Thank you, Sidro. Fire Panda. $51 super chat. I wonder something. How many people do you think that this is their first time seeing TNA pull a TNA? There were a few. They probably had some newbies. Are they going to come back for Bound for Glory? That I don't know. But that's not really the way that you want to end the show. It's kind of a sour note to go out on. Johnny Bernie, tonight's main event was peak 2010's Ring of Honor booking, choosing to chase some heat rather than pulling the trigger. How unfortunate. NXT wins again. Yes, NXT does win again. NXT won big tonight. Aaron, I'd like to see Team NXT against Team TNA in War Games. Well, unfortunately for you, War Games has been co-opted by the main roster. And they're already advertising it for November, so they're not doing an NXT War Games. Although at this point, though, that would make sense. Mr. Rod, 1990. AJ Styles returning to TNA tonight was awesome. What a time to be alive. He felt right at home. Luis. This pay-per-view was not a $40 pay-per-view. This was more like a $20 pay-per-view. But with great to excellent matches from the bottom of the card all the way up to the very top. So you just said it was a card with great to excellent matches from top to bottom. That's only worth $20 to you? I mean, that sounds like a $40 pay-per-view to me. I paid more than that for the AEW show a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago. It was last week. And so many fucking shows, I don't even know what week it is. We got Sidro. 12 months of channel membership. Recently, a guy tried to rob two nuns with a knife. They ended up knocking him out. Lesson here is, never take a knife to a nun fight. Sidro is back in form here, I see. A knife to a nun fight. He also says, Masha Slam-a-Bitch would be a fun new gimmick. Slam-a-Bitch. Masha Slam-a-Bitch. Well, I'll tell you what, if TNA ever does one of their own like fan access type things, they could have a Masha Slam-a-Bitch station. And people pay to walk up to her and she just slams them. They used to have like a dunk doink tank many years ago. They could absolutely do something like this. Aaron with a $4.99. Trick should totally put the title in a briefcase and form a faction named Trick Riders, who help him retain until Santana beats him a year from now. That is a terrible idea, actually. I feel like I'm reliving a nightmare just by reading that super chat. Markel World, 47 months of channel membership. He's catching up to the 51. Says, I'm in the building. Hope all is well, Solo. I like the pay-per-view. JC's last one remaining from Toxic Attraction, the underdog. And as it turns out, the most successful. Right? Mandy Rose never won the TNA Knockouts title. Who knew that JC Jane was going to go on to become the most successful member of that faction? Trill Mexican, back to love from Ultra Boss. Solo Monster is a man of great and extravagant taste. Regardless of how this review goes, it's a memorial. It's a memorial one. I think you mean a memorable one. It's not a memorial. It's not a fucking funeral. I did open with that. So if you want to know what the opening song was, that's what it was. Back to Love by Ultra Boss. One of my favorite songs. Bid Moon. TNA is better than AEW. And he puts the ones up in the air. Cheers to us. Alex with a $25 super chat. Brother Solo, not to get carried away, especially with your busy schedule, but can we expect a Bound for Glory review? Way too soon to make a decision on that. So it's possible, but I can't make any promises just yet. Sidro, what pizza is fun to be around? Quattro formaggi. Or cheese, a jolly good fellow. And will you join me for kosher hot dogs tonight? Please, beef frank with me. Thunder Force 2000. I would have thought if any of the Fatal Influence members were going to be NXT Women's Champion, it would have been Fallon Henley. I thought the same thing. That's when JC won the belt from Stephanie. I was like, you know what? This feels like it was done to shock people. I can't imagine why it wouldn't have been Fallon Henley. But you know what? Good for JC Jane. She gets the spotlight to herself for a little while. It's not going to last forever. So good for her. Again, I thought the match they had tonight was fine. It was good. VC 11122. Brother Solo, never thought I would see the day that you would do another live TNA review. Where are the TNA soldiers at, or whatever they call them? That's the TNA soldiers. Souljas. You got to get it right. It's the TNA Soldiers. And they had the General. He used to wear one of those furry hats, and he would be in the bunker. He would be very upset with me when I would criticize TNA. He was going to line up all of his soldiers. Like the Swiss Army. Ryan Hood, thanks for giving TNA another shot. Santana was robbed. Pay-per-view was awesome. Great show as always. Thank you, Ryan. Sidro says, lost job at Pepsi. I tested positive for Coke. I'm actually not surprised by that. Edkin NJ, is the JC Jane push too forced? Yes. Boots, Javon Evans against Leon Slater for the X Division title at Bound for Glory. I think that would be amazing. In both cases, yeah, a lot of similarities there. You got two guys who I think are the same age. Two of the younger guys on their respective rosters who clearly have star potential and they see a lot in. Both great wrestlers. Why not? Retro KOH, say his name and he gets pinned. Everybody pins Hendry. Everybody pins Hendry. I mean, he's on his way out soon. He's going to WWE. It almost doesn't even matter at this point what they do with him. Gold Standard says TNA is better than AEW. All right. There you go. He has planted his flag. Dr. Dakota Scorpio says, sounds like TNA got cucked out of their top titles. Also, first time viewer here with the new name change. Yeah, YouTube still hasn't, it's a YouTube thing. I mean, they still haven't fixed it. So we see everybody's at handle now. The crazy, which you guys probably could change if you wanted to. Probably change it to whatever the, I mean, you'll still see the at symbol, but I don't know. You might be able to change it back to your original name on your end. I'm not sure. The Crazy Men 88 says Masha, Slater, and Santana will be great in WWE. Michael, TNA even lost to the Fourth Rope promotion. That also was a WWE call to showcase Zilla Fatu. Well, it wasn't a very good showcase for Zilla Fatu. He got all of 90 seconds in the ring and he missed the top rope splash. I mean, he did a pop-up Samoan drop. That was about it. As somebody who gets to see Zilla on a fairly regular basis and call his matches, I could tell you there's a lot more to Zilla Fatu that you guys did not get to see tonight. And, you know, for a guy that has not much more than a year of experience in the business, he's very good, and he's coming along nicely. You didn't really get the chance to see that tonight. El Kabong says, good Lord, what do they see in JC Jane? JC Jane. I don't know. She's a favorite of theirs. R. Leon, what's your opinion, if any, on the Booker Delirious? I honestly don't really have an opinion on him. I can't tell you what his key achievements were story-wise when he was booking Ring of Honor because I just wasn't... When he took over, I wasn't following it as closely as I used to, and I don't know, you know, what to credit him for. I've heard conflicting things. I've heard, oh, he's a terrible booker, and I've heard, no, he's got his strengths and he's pretty good. I've heard it both ways. So I don't really have much of an opinion on him. The Masterpiece 09, from transitional to two belts, JC is undeniable. And Sidro, what do you call a Mexican quarterback? El Paso. El Paso, everybody. Yes, you got me on that last one. El Paso. You got me on the last one. Matt says, change your channel name on your YouTube profile. This is for all you people out there. And that will change your at name. So there you go. If that matters to you, you can give that a shot. Because it ain't nothing on my end. I can tell you, I've looked into it. All right. Now you guys killed it on the likes here. Right now we're sitting at 568, which I appreciate here on this rare TNA stream, which means let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
El Paso, he says. Oh, man. Let's be the booker here. 1:30 in the morning on a Monday morning. Adios mio. RK Bro. Now I want you to take a look at Randy Orton here in this image. This was only a few years ago when he was tagging with Matt Riddle. Look at Randy Orton now, like as compared to him in this image. Like he looks like a monster now. He looks completely deflated in this image. I got to find out what this guy's routine and what his diet is. But yes, RK-Bro, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle is kicking us off here and be the booker. Eminem, thank you. Is this the TNA edition of Be the Booker? Well, I mean, there's TNA talents in here, but we're probably not going to land on too many of them. So we have RK-Bro against the team. Look at this team. Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre, the former Raw Tag Team Champions. Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes on opposing sides. Cody and Drew on the same side. Orton today would eat that Orton for dinner. No, he would eat, that would be the appetizer. Fuck dinner. Women's be the booker. Oh, it's Maki Ito. Flipping off her opponent here. Haven't heard about Maki Ito in a while. Wonder what she's up to. Maki Ito against Ms. Jackie. I mean, first of all, Jackie would kill her. It's just not a match that really speaks to me. That's a miss for me. Now our main event. Well, this guy is never a miss. This is the man himself, the legend, the Hall of Famer, Terry Funk. Terry Funk, where he belongs, in the main event. That's right. Terry Funk against Rowdy Roddy Piper. Main event on any show, anywhere, any generation, any era. It doesn't matter. Just the promos alone. Can you imagine the promos leading up to the match itself? And then put them in like a Texas death match or something? Dog collar match? That's great. And Lost Dill. Looks like he's going to close us out here. $9.99. Just showing some love. And I'm starting to get into streaming. My fellow Solomonster fans, come check me out, please. And thank you. My Superman review is up. Love you, Solo. So go check out Lost Dill. Yeah, I haven't seen Superman. I have really no great interest in seeing Superman. I'm waiting on Mortal Kombat 2 in a few months. I saw that trailer, and that trailer kicked ass. I can't wait to see that. Terry Funk against Roddy Piper. Put them in a dog collar death match. You want to combine the two? Don't give John Moxley any ideas. A dog collar death match? That works. You put them in any match, and that's going to work. Well, thank you. This has been fun hanging out with me for a couple of hours here on a Sunday night for the Slammiversary review. Hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed the show, despite that shitty ending. I enjoyed the show. Mike Santana will have his day. That day better be in October, because if not, what an epic fail this all is. If you missed episode 921 of The Sound Off, it's an easy listen. Covered a lot of different things, including my rant on Bill Goldberg and his... I gave the guy his flowers last week. He had to go ruin the entire thing. So the Goldberg rant is on there, but also I talk about Seth Rollins and Buff Bagwell and the SummerSlam card as it is shaping up and a bunch of other things. So if you missed it, go check that out. So that way we can climb the charts. Still trying to beat Cornette. He's the only one ahead of me. So go check that out. I'll be live with you in less than 24 hours. Come back here tomorrow night for the... Oh, maybe Sidra won't. Ooh, fancy boy. But everybody else, come on back here tomorrow night for the Monday Night Raw post-show live on YouTube. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a good week. And yes, I did talk about Buff Bagwell, Snow Dog. So go check that out. I will see you tomorrow night. Until then, take care.